Welcome back. We're live, pal, and we have a special guest, someone who is near and dear to my heart, Andrew Zarian. I want to introduce folks to Mike Gilbert, host of Brace for Impact on the Fight Game Media Network. What is up, Mike?
Hey, now. What's going on, guys? How are you?
And I like that he's representing both of our favorite football teams there, 49ers. They made some big moves yesterday. I still don't understand the NFL salary cap and how they're able to do it. But hey, let's go. Go 49ers. And we're not here to talk football, but I just wanted to point that out. Andrew, you had pretty big story that came out last week about a possible new AEW show. Do you want to discuss this story?
Yeah, I'll go into it a little bit. I mean, it got picked up everywhere. From everything that's indicated to me, they're getting another show. You know, and I've been pretty loose about alluding to where it is. But, you know, you got to also think about what day makes sense in reality for them to put on a show. And I'm thinking it's probably going to be a Saturday show. You can figure out the time. But
is it going to be on TBS?
Turner property.
Okay, so we don't
say,
know.
I would say for sure. I don't know. Yeah. I don't know. I haven't. I wasn't told a specific. I was just told on a, you know, obviously a Turner property with Warner Media Group. So I'm assuming it's either TNT or TBS. I can't imagine it's True TV or any of the other properties. But you know, this is another opportunity. There's demand for inexpensive programming, especially first run programming that gets eyeballs. It's a different night. You have the ability to capture a different demo of audience with it being a earlier time. You know, we were doing this on Observer Live. We were talking about it, and I presented a question. I'm like, what is a demo that they do not have as much access to between the hours of 8 and 9 or 10 or 11 that they do at 6 p.m. on a Saturday afternoon? I'm just throwing that time slot, hypothetically. It would be a younger demo. Mm-hmm. And in order to grow more, I was at the Garden on Sunday. I know we're going to talk about that a little bit, but
yeah,
you know, very different audience. I mean, it was night and day. So depending on what AEW wants to go towards or what kind of demo they're trying to grow, I think this is a positive if they have an earlier time slot on a weekend that could maybe garner a different type of audience to continue growing their Wednesday night programming, first run, you know, their flagship programming.
That is an interesting story. And I guess my question for Mike, and you know, Mike watches pretty much everything when it comes to the main wrestling programs. Do you have an appetite for another hour of AEW programming? And this may sort of play into what Andrew's saying, is maybe this is not necessarily for those who are watching Dynamite and Rampage already.
No, I don't have an appetite at all. In fact, I think we need less wrestling on television. They got to realize that some of us got families and jobs and stuff like that and stuff to do on the weekend. You know, not all of us live for watching pro wrestling. And I think adding another show on the weekend just sounds, I don't know. I would probably watch it if somebody paid me a lot of money to watch it, but I just don't see me adding that show into my regular viewing habits unless they go above and beyond to make it Dynamite level, which I don't see why they're I don't see the evidence that they're going to do that, because Rampage is far and below what Dynamite is, and I stopped watching Rampage probably a year ago. So I really just don't see it. And then for Saturday at six o'clock is kind of the rumor that's being put out there. I know maybe younger people will watch it before they go out. To me, that sounds like it's the Matlock demo. To me, like, maybe my grandma
Andy
might
Griffith
watch at 6 o'clock. Andy, yeah, the Andy Griffith show. They think that's the Andy Griffith demo. So maybe they'll get that demo. I just don't see a lot of people having an appetite for another hour of wrestling. They need to focus on just making Dynamite as strong as humanly possible. But I get why they would add another hour of television, because that's more money into their resources, right? And they're probably going to have to grow their roster more than it already is, even though they have so many people not wrestling right now. But I just wonder if they're going to have the infrastructure in place to be able to support this, because they also got Ring of Honor, they got Dark, and they got Dark Elevation, along with Rampage and Dynamite. I just don't know how this whole thing's going to work.
So, Andrew, I wanted to dig a little bit deeper into your theory here that, you know, they could be getting or looking at a different demo, maybe a little bit of a younger demo. Because I agree with Mike, like for us, for those of us who watch this very closely, adding another hour is not great news necessarily, but there may be folks who don't feel the need to watch Rampage. Maybe they just sort of pick and choose. Like, oh yeah, Dynamite has a great main event. I'm going to watch Dynamite. Eh, not really watching Rampage. Oh, this Saturday show, it's intriguing because they're doing something different. I hearken back to WWE historically would try different things, especially during the 90s, to with their syndicated shows. They would do like a Raw recap show because, you know, the Raw show was probably a little too racy to put on Saturday morning, but you would kind of cut out the raciness and you put it out as a show that is a little bit friendlier for kids. I don't know if that is a thing. That seems like it would be not great. But we also have this other property that Mike mentioned, which is ROH. I know we have the Honor Club thing. But man, I would love to see ROH actually get a TV show versus,
yeah,
you know, having the streaming thing.
Listen, I think in reality, the only show that really makes sense that you could say, okay, this is a necessity to have is Ring of Honor. I don't know if it's Ring of Honor. It was never said to me Ring of Honor. The person that told me has nothing to do with professional wrestling. So they don't really, they wouldn't even know the difference between what Ring of Honor is and what AEW does. They know wrestling, obviously. They know that it's a property. AEW is one of their properties on Turner, but they're not really smart to pro wrestling to know enough. But, you right. know, here's the other thing, right? Rampage came out of necessity. The story mm-hmm. is that they wanted a third hour, so they kind of, this was, let's make a deal and let's do another show. I don't think it's a negative to have another hour. However, is it going to take away from your main property? Is it going to take away from Dynamite? Because I agree. Rampage took away from Dynamite for me. You took away key matches and key people that you see every week on Dynamite, and now they were sporadic. Sometimes they're on Rampage, sometimes they're on Dynamite. I know that there needs to be balance, but I think it was a little too soon to add that second show. If they had waited maybe till now, it would have been a different story. But, you know, the network's offering you money. You're never going to say no. This is the same problem that WWE faces. Why does WWE have a third hour? Because the network is willing to pay them a lot more money to have a third hour. If my option is have another hour of Rampage or have another hour of Dynamite or have a separate show where you could do something unique, I'll take the separate show. Yeah. But you also have to look at what is Turner doing on, let's say, TBS or TNT at that 6 o'clock hour currently for viewership? Is it something that's garnering a 500,000 viewers?
I wouldn't even know.
I don't know. I haven't even looked, but I'm sure someone could look into it. If they're getting, you know, 300,000 viewers and now you're able to put a live first run wrestling show on there. That could maybe get 400,000 or 380,000. You're still in the positive here, and it's not really costing you that much money.
Yeah, but if they were to put Ring of Honor on that Saturday time slot, does Ring of Honor get that 300,000 or 400,000? My guess is it wouldn't, because Ring of Honor is kind of a dead brand. I don't think WBD wants anything to do with it. So that's why we're getting another AEW show.
Yeah, that's yeah. Well, AEW, that's part of it, right? Like, we don't know. We don't know what
Wrestling
Ring of Honor is able to do.
Wrestling of Honor.
Well, they could do
AEW Ring of Honor.
Well, they could do AEW presents Ring of Honor, and that would be kind of the blend in the middle. But does TBS want to show, like, to say from the Impact Zone there in Orlando, is TBS going to want a show like that, or are they going to want another live property in a bigger setting? I'm guessing that TBS, modern TBS, would want that. Even though back in the day, WCW Saturday Night and WCW Worldwide and Pro, they were from, you know, what, Disney MGM Studios. So they did like it back in the day, but that's obviously a completely different regime. So yeah. I don't know. I'm going to be curious to see how this all plays out.
Maybe yeah, that's me too. Part of the cuteness of it, right? That could be part of the cuteness of it is Tony Khan really loves the history of wrestling. Oh, we'll do our version of a studio show or something. It could be something like that. But yeah.
Listen, you know, Tony Schiavone hosting it, you know, the nostalgia factor of it kind of works. Listen, NWA had some success with the nostalgia in the first run, you know, before the pandemic.
Yeah.
Listen, I'm not saying they would have had a 500,000 or 300,000 people watch, but there is an element to it. If they come up with something unique, they could do something pretty cool. Now, whether or not it works, that we won't know until it goes live.
Here's another question, Andrew, because, you know, I know you study the marketing side of things. When it comes to being a good partner, AEW is establishing their relationship with Warner Brothers Discovery. We saw, even though I'm not sure I understand why the international title, which is something that you'd heavily hinted at last week and the week before.
Yes.
I don't know how that relates to Shazam and sort of leveling up. And by all looks, Shazam is actually not going to do well compared to most of these other comic book movies. But that also the partnership, the synergy with your partner, being a good partner creates business down the line. They can count on Tony Khan for being able to do something with time, and maybe they're trying to attract this. Oh, I have wrestling, and you trust me with Dynamite, and to some extent you trust me with Rampage. I can fill that. I have the content to fill that hour.
Yeah. No, it always comes down to that, right? You want your network partners to be happy. You sometimes do things you don't want to do, but it's for the synergy of the brands. And right now they're in a contract year. They're going into, you know, the next couple of months, they're going to be gearing up to sign a contract. I don't anticipate them leaving a Turner property. I don't anticipate the show really changing. The hope is that Tony gets more money for his properties because he's shown that he's able to consistently get around the 1 million viewers per week, which is not easy on cable at all in 2022, 2023. So, you know, these are all factors that come into play here. But what does that say? You know, the network is demanding more content from you. They've already gotten the reality show that's going on after Dynamite, which is kind of a test for a third hour, in my opinion.
Yeah, that's what I think, too.
That's how I see it. That's how I see it. But, you know, these are all this is all positive. This is a good thing for AEW. A lot of people are making it into a negative that do they need another hour? You know, it depends on what you're consuming and how you consume and how much time you have. Do I have more time in my week to watch more wrestling? No, but I probably will because I got to cover it. But, you know, there are people. If there's a 500,000 people to 250,000 to 300,000 people that'll watch on a Saturday afternoon, I think that's a success.
I got it. The debut of whatever this Saturday morning show is, it's got to be in Chicago. CM Punk comes. I'm just kidding. I don't even.
Oh my god,
there.
That's how
I don't
you do
go
it,
there
dude.
At all. I don't even want to bring that up. It was just a joke. But yeah, I think producer John said cooking with CM Punk on Saturday.
Cooking with CM Punk.
So I guess the last thing, and then we'll move on. Am I off in? Did anyone else wonder how the leveling up of this All Atlantic title even kind of fit in with Shazam? Because I don't know the origin stories of a lot of these comic book stories. Maybe there's something in the leveling up. Did anyone else understand how those two connected?
I have no clue.
No. I've never that seen Shazam, never read Shazam, so I have no idea. But I hear it's not doing well, so it should be on HBO Max very soon. So that's good news for me because I'll probably check it out.
Yeah. I mean, I saw.
You
I
know
noticed,
what? I just asked somebody. I just asked somebody.
Okay, we'll get it.
Can you please verify what the synergy between Shazam and the international title on AEW TV is? Question mark.
Yeah, Rich probably knows, right? So he's a comic book guy. Maybe he knows.
Yeah, Rich would know. Rich would know. I don't even think Rich knew.
I mean, I thought the video was cool. The trailer interspersed with Orange Cassidy and Jarrett. I thought that was at least cool. All right, let's move on. Because, Andrew, you mentioned you went to a WWE Live. I saw a meet and greet, something or other. I'm sure there was awesome. A house show tied to that. How was that experience? Because you have two young children, and this has kind of been your thing all along is, you know, this is who WWE is really for in these scenarios, is like these meet and greets and these big shows. And for, you know, you've compared it to Broadway in that sense. So how was the experience?
So big shout out to Billy from their VIP management department. They hooked us up. You know, they reached out. I actually, Rich reminded me on the show. He's like, hey, why don't you contact this dude? Because he's off. He's like, hey, if you ever want to do like a meet and greet with the kids, contact me. So my kids recently got into wrestling heavily. The Royal Rumble was their gateway into this. Same way it was a gateway for me. And, you know, they've been asking me, when can we go? When can we go? I had totally forgotten there's a house show this weekend. I didn't even realize. So like it was like last minute Saturday. I reached out and they hooked us up. Man, you know, I got to tell you, it made my kids freaking weak. They'll always remember this. They got the whole VIP experience. You know, we went through the garden. I didn't have tickets yet. I'll give a little background. I didn't have the ticket, so I had to go through like the special, like the hole that I know how to get inside the garden. And I went up to a security guy. I'm like, hey, listen, this is what I'm here for. They're like, hey, no problem. Friendliest building in the world. And WWE was freaking fantastic. My daughter got to meet Bailey and Io and Dakota. My son,
all the heels. Did you see what they did to Trish Stratus?
I saw. You know what? They almost beat up my wife. They almost beat up Jessica. Jess went and said hello, and then there was like some miscommunication between my wife and Io, and Bailey's like, "Yo, she'll kick your butt. You better respect her." My wife's like, "Oh no, I can't fight you." But it was freaking awesome. And then Cody was great. You know, he's a total pro. My son went up to him and he's like, "My dad said you're beating Roman Reigns." You know, and I got the look. I kind of got a look. I was like, I didn't say anything. I said, I want him to beat Roman. I said he should beat Roman. But it was great. But you know, going in that building, I could watch both products, right? I could happily watch WWE and AEW because I saw the curtain got pulled back for me. I saw Oz. I saw what WWE really is. It's Disney on Ice. It's Broadway. It's a touring show of Aladdin. It's everything that you ever imagined, you know, a live action comic book would be at this point. When I'm in that building, all I heard was kids screaming. Okay, the whole night. It was just kids screaming. It was total excitement, kids jumping up and down. And you're watching, and I'm like, you know, I'm a grown man, and I'm sitting here, and I'm overanalyzing this sometimes. And I'm thinking, I'm like, you know, they should have done this, they shouldn't have done that. But in reality, they're catering to those kids. They're not talking to me anymore. Maybe sometimes. But it's an overall variety show. They have it for the kids. They have it for you know, teenagers. They have it for old school fans. What they're doing with Cody right now is obviously catering towards that also. It's a very different experience than going to an AEW show, which, Garrett, you and I have been to AEW shows. It's the best experience ever if you want to watch live professional wrestling. I say it all the time. All Out last year, not the CM Punk muffin issue, but the year prior, was probably the greatest pro wrestling show I've ever been to. And I've been to WrestleManias, and I've been to a ton of shows at the Garden. I'm able to separate the two. I'm able to look at both products and say, this is a very different product. Now, I want to play a game. Yes. Who do you think got one of the loudest reactions? Okay? One of the loudest reactions. Obviously, Cody. Obviously, Sammy. And, you know, you got those. Who got as big a reaction than all those top guys?
Who was on that show? Was Ray on it?
Ray was on it. Ray got a really big pop.
Okay.
Not Otis. Ray. But
it's not Ray.
You know, Otis did get a huge pop too. Very old, but not
kids
Otis.
Love Otis.
Kids love him, yeah.
It's not The Miz.
It was not The Miz. But you know, I'll tell you, it was LA Knight.
Oh, you just gosh, hurt my feelings.
Give me a break.
I'm gonna tell you, that building erupted. For LA Knight, to the point, and I was looking at my son because I was trying to help him with his popcorn, and I was like, "Who the F just walked out of here?" Like it was, I thought, you know, we got Cody came out, or you know, like a returning veteran came back. I look, it's LA Knight, and these kids were going bonkers. I was in line. I was asking, I'm like, "Who are you here to see?" I got two answers: Bray Wyatt, over and over again. The whole night, everybody wanted to see Bray. He wasn't there. LA Knight and Sammy.
Wow.
Those were the three in that order. Bray, LA, and Sammy. That's all I heard all night. Fascinating, right?
Wow. I may have to reevaluate this LA Knight thing because he...
I don't know.
I don't connect with that character. We're missing it. But it's
you know, obviously,
is it a kid's character? It's not even a kid's character.
Well, I just see it as a Austin and Rock cosplay. That's why I don't like it.
Yeah.
But it's possible that his little catchphrase works, and you know, I guess he survived Bray Wyatt, right? Because that was the thing that we thought was not going to happen, was that he's going to get beat up, and people who after they face Bray, they're worse for the wear. But he seems fine. Like, he was on TV. He just loses matches, but you know, his gimmick seems to be working, at least to the crowd. So hey, I may have to reevaluate this thing, man.
I can't do it. I've been crapping on that guy for so long. I just refuse to believe that he's over. So I'm just going to
You have a little bit longer of a history with him than I do, because he was on Impact for a while too, right?
Yeah, he was there. He was like another FCW washout that John Gabruick had brought over, and he started his cosplay Rock in Austin there, and he had some success there, don't get me wrong, but whenever he left, like, nobody missed him. And him going to WWE made sense. He's tailor made for that promotion. I'm honestly not that surprised that he was successful. It's just his problem is once the bell rings, what do you do there?
Yeah, I mean, he's okay. He's a vet. He knows his role. He's playing his role really well. And I think that makes a little bit more sense now that Andrew mentioned it, because he gets chances, right? He gets chances that a lot of people don't get. And it must be because they like what he's doing with the character. And, you know, he's not winning matches. Again, he is losing all of these matches, but they just see him as someone they can kind of trust to put in the ring with these people and to build up programs with people and to ultimately, you know, lose a program. But Andrew, going back to your meet and greet thing there, how does Cody feel amongst the more casual WWE audience? Because I know a lot of the hardcore audience is really into him and this run, but is he connecting with the casuals, you think?
Yeah, I you know what, he stands out so much where you kind of stop and you look at him. Obviously everybody in that room knew who he was and they were into him. The big question I have is, okay, so let's say he wins the title, which I think he should. How do you keep the momentum going coming off of the Bloodline storyline? You're going to have to do something big.
And I didn't like that promo on Monday.
You didn't like the promo. People loved the promo.
I didn't like it. I thought he was leaning into the thing that I worry is going to be ultimately how the fans turn on him. Like, the over emoting and building himself up into this, like I don't even really know what the story of the promo was, but by the end of this promo, he was like so emotional, and you know, and look, the whole thing that really means a lot to him is winning this title. I get that part, but I wonder about, you know, there's a segment of this crowd who goes, man, these promos are all about Cody and nobody else. And I thought they did a really good job of making him come in and save Sammy until somebody told me, oh yeah, that's the Dusty playbook. Dusty would just save all the baby faces. And then that's not the best way to do this. So I don't know. Like, I'm into it. I want to be in the present with Cody, but I do fear a little bit of the fans, you know, kind of maybe when he does get the title, maybe not being as into him, which is the problem with almost every babyface champion in the history of wrestling. So this is not going to be any different. I would just like to see a nice little run for him where he can stay hot. That's what I'm hoping, because I think it's cool when you have really fun, smart, and kick-ass babyfaces.
Yeah, and Cody faced the same issue at AEW. Like, every promo he did turned into the Gettysburg Address, right? It was just super long and super emotional. And then eventually the fans started to turn on him. I kind of see that happening with him here after he wins the title, because now that chase is over. He got what he wanted. The fans are pretty fickle. They did a similar thing to Daniel Bryan when he won the title. He didn't get as much support coming out of that title win as he did going into it. I do fear for Cody having that same issue.
I kind of blame Vince on that one, though, because did we really need to see Daniel Bryan versus Kane? Was that the feud that we all wanted to see after that great title win, that great WrestleMania 30 moment? Was like, yes, and next is Kane.
They didn't have anybody, right? They had nobody for him.
Yeah.
I don't know. He's still left, right?
Yeah.
Yep, Batista left. Randy, he wasn't going to go right back into it. Randy at that point. Interesting, though. It's always the problem with the babyface, right? You love the chase, and once they get it, it's okay, he's going to lose eventually. When is the last successful babyface, pure babyface, that held a title for a while run that company had?
Cena.
Cena would be, right? But Cena was getting booed. Like overwhelmingly beloved babyface.
Ooh. Probably Austin, then. It would have to be Austin.
He wasn't even a babyface. Yeah. He wasn't really, you know?
Well, he was a different kind of babyface. I mean, he won all of his matches, and he never got outsmarted. He just flipped people off. Like, that was really the only heel aspect of the character.
Fascinating.
Rock and Austin. Did Triple H have a quality babyface run? I'm trying to remember. I mean, he probably did.
No.
He had so many different
runs. Batista had a good face run. Face run.
There you go. That's a good one. Early John Cena, I guess, right? Early John Cena.
Early John Cena. Triple H beat Jericho in, what, 02? And he lost it a month later to Hogan. And then he turned heel. So.
Yeah.
When all else failed for Triple H, he just turned heel.
Low blow someone and take the sledgehammer. That's it.
Mm-hmm. All right, let's move along. I just want to mention this one thing, which is the absence of Bray Wyatt. Like Andrew said, a lot of these kids were looking forward to him. They loved the character. And that is the disconnect that I understand, whereas I personally don't like the character. I don't like the skits. I don't think anything makes sense. But like Andrew said, these kids just think it's cool, right? They think his character is cool.
It.
They think the Fiend mask is cool. I don't know if they think Uncle Howdy is cool. I'm not sure if you could think Uncle Howdy is cool, but maybe. But, you know, there's an absence with Bray. Dave mentioned it on Wrestling Observer Radio this morning that he expects the match to happen with Bobby Lashley. Bobby Lashley tweeted something that made it sort of seem maybe the match wasn't happening yesterday. But the internet was spread like wildfire about all kinds of different rumors about Bray. But as far as we know, as far as what Dave has reported, it sounds like it's something that is not permanent. It is just a hiccup, and he's going to be back, hopefully, for WrestleMania, at least for those kids who wanted to see him at that house show.
Dude, I'm telling you, it was every time that the lights dimmed, they popped in that building thinking it's Bray. It was unbelievable. Like, my kids love it. They want to see Bray.
Was there an explanation why he wasn't there for the people who expected him to be there?
No explanation. Just they did a battle royal to start the show. It was a mixed women's match. It was like a 3-on-3 or 4-on-4. Then they had a battle royal where LA Knight was in it, and they were advertising LA Knight versus Bray. So I think at that point people realized, okay, it's not happening.
Got it. So,
but every time the lights dimmed, people popped.
So, Mike, before we move on to the next topic, rather than do this at the end, I wanted to give you a chance to plug your podcast a little bit, because what happens on this show is we get kind of close to the end, and then Lance Storm sends us angry DMs saying that we need to hurry up and get off. So I don't want to rush that part for you. So why don't we just get the plugs out of the way right now?
So I have a podcast. It's called Brace for Impact, and it's on the Fight Game Media Network, which you can get on Spotify, Apple Podcasts. We actually do a full show on YouTube every week. It comes out usually, it depends on when Garrett gets to it, but it's recorded on late Thursday night because I'm in Hawaii. So I'm usually recording, and Garrett tries to get it out by midnight that night, and then it'll be uploaded to YouTube on Fridays. And then we also do that's one part of it. We also do another part of it called the Wrestling World News with Mike and JD, where we just kind of spitball about all the topical things that are happening in pro wrestling. Essentially, we just take Andrew Zarian and Sean Ross Sapp and Meltzer's news, and then we just talk about their scoops. That's what we do on that.
You analyze.
I do the same exact thing.
No, you and JD have a fun thing going on. You guys have created a nice little community around your show as well. And, you know, the thing that I think bonds the three of us is we all come from a background of talk radio, of loving Howard Stern. Like, Mike is also a big Stern guy. So it's kind of interesting that you know, those of us who kind of grew up as like fans of, I don't know if you guys listen to that much radio anymore, but I almost listen to no radio. But that is still such a big part of what we do on our podcast, because we would hear these guys in our ears when we were growing up and being like, oh, that would be kind of cool to do that thing that they're doing. And so it's kind of cool how we all connected in that way. And Mike, did that kind of drive you to want to do podcasts, was just, you know, being such a fan of like radio shows and talk shows and such?
So when I was in high school, they asked me what I wanted to be when I grew up, and I told them I wanted to be Howard Stern. I'm not that tall. I'm definitely not Jewish, and I'm from California. So it was a little bit weird, but I told them that I wanted to be on the radio, and I actually got to do an internship at the local radio station. And when I told the guy I wanted to be Howard Stern, he was like a Christian guy, and he hated Howard Stern. He tried to get me to go away from my Stern fandom. But I just couldn't, because I would fall asleep listening to Loveline with Adam Carolla and Dr. Yes. Drew. And then I would wake up early in the morning to listen to Howard Stern before I went to school the next day. And then I would use all their jokes and tell them to my friend as if they were my own. And so when, you know, I ended up going a different path. I didn't go into radio. That just wasn't an option for me whenever I graduated. But I ultimately joined the military. And that was just something like in the back of my head that I always, like, one of my big regrets is that I never got into radio. And I was like, well, what are the things that you know the best, and what could you talk about intelligently? Answer is mostly nothing I can talk about intelligently, but I can have a decent conversation about pro wrestling, and I can tell some jokes. And so I eventually started getting into podcasting back in 2017. And then I ventured over into Impact Podcasting, because wasn't nobody else doing it. So I was like, well, there's my opening. So I'll do an Impact show since somebody else is doing it. And then here I am in 2023 doing an Impact show.
And it's kind of cool because, I mean, if you listen to Andrew's stuff, you can tell that there's an influence of how the entire Howard Stern production goes.
Like,
affected
by it.
but it's also the stuff that surrounds the show. It's the post show and, you know, Baba Boo. There's influences in this tremendous show based on what we do, just because it's like, oh, this is so good. And then you're influenced by it, and it sort of becomes part of the act. So no, I just thought that was really fascinating, because the three of us all were giant Stern fans. And, you know, I mean, there are still people who listen to him today, but back, you know, in the mid 90s and the early 2000s was really like a heyday for me. I know that when that show was just off the chain and wild.
Man, if I tell you what happened at Scores last night, you know?
All right, let's move on to...
Absolutely right. I think if our generation, you know, if you're a talk radio fan, regardless of what you think of Stern, the impact that Stern has, especially on my career and yours, and my career tremendously, considering my wife is the godmother to Chauncey Hayden's daughter.
Yeah.
So from the Stern show. So like, think about how intertwined my life has become from that show. It's amazing. And then next thing you know, you're talking about professional wrestling on the internet. So it's a wild ride.
Yeah. My dad just gave me the book Private Parts. He's like, I'm done with it. You can read it. And then I just like, oh my gosh, like, this dude is crazy. All right. Let's talk about some stuff for WrestleMania coming up. I was kind of interested in both of your thoughts on the Rey versus Dominic storyline. And Andrew, I'll start with you. I kind of wondered, like, if you and Papa Zarian had beef, like, what would your beef be? What would your Rey and Dom beef be? Because for Dom, it's the fact that Rey worked a little bit more than maybe other dads did, and that's really the essence and the genesis of this beef. What would Papa Zarian and young Andrew Zarian's beef be if there was a turn, if you turned heel on your pops?
You know, he didn't buy me that Subaru WRX, and he got me a 2.5 Impreza. He didn't do it, and that would be the reason. I thought that was great, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
I
thought that was fantastic.
I liked that part of it, but yeah, you could tell that crowd was not feeling it, and it affected Dom a little bit. He got caught up in the what chants a little bit. and it was like really slow. Like I was dying for this dude to get some of these words out. But ultimately, because the storyline has been so great and it's so simple, I think it's just been super effective. But see, I thought it was going to be your pops is like lifting and you're trying to get the bot as a young man. You're trying to peak for like a competition. And
he's hogging
like,
it.
You're like, come on. Your dad's like,
are you kidding me? That happens now, bro. That happens now. My pops comes over and I got that workout room. I got a little gym in the front of the house and he's like pumping iron. He's on the machine. I'm like, can I get my turn? He's like, no, get out of here. You don't need it.
Why do you think this story works so well, Mike? Is it just Ray and Dom are so bought in, or is the storytelling, like, what aspect do you like about this?
I think it's all of that. Like, the storytelling is done so well, but Dominic, and he's surprising a lot of people, because I think a lot of people kind of poo-pooed his him being on the show to begin with, because he was very green when he started, but he has done a very good job of being a heel. And he's gotten me sucked into it to where I took a long time off of watching Raw, and Dominic and the Bloodline brought me back, and Dominic has just been fantastic. He's been so interesting. Him going to prison was just very well done, doing the prison Dom character. And I think a lot of people can relate to a father and son squabble. Like, you know, me and my dad almost got into fisticuffs several times. One of us, because I worked for him at the packing house where he was in charge of, and he was making me clean all the bathrooms because I'm the boss's son. So he had to treat me worse than everybody else. So we would get into it whenever I got it home. I was like, hey, Dad, did you need me really to clean all of the bathrooms today? What about these other cats? Why aren't they cleaning the bathrooms? Why do I got to do it? So, you know, we can all relate to that. Now, it wasn't really where there's an absentee father, but I think some people can also relate to that too, to where the father's working so hard to give everything that he can for his son, but the son still resents him. And the son then turns away from over a girl, right? A crazy girl, which that can happen in any type of father-son dynamic. So I just think that they have done, like, it's almost a perfect storyline. And they got this Bloodline and the Judgment Day, just two perfect storylines, you know, concluding at the same event. I think they really just hit a home run with the whole thing.
Yeah, for me, like, my dad's, like, all-county baseball player in high school, and he's pitching in college, and then he meets my mom and they get married and such, and so I'm the coach's son and I can't throw a baseball 95 miles an hour, so all of a sudden I'm just in this shadow as a kid trying to play and being the coach's son. If you have been a coach's son or a coach's daughter, that is a whole thing all to itself, just from the pressure.
Dude, I get it. I get it. And everything. I get it.
So I'm with Mike. Like, I think a lot of us can relate. And, you know, there's something where you can kind of go like, ooh, like I kind of feel that for Dom. But now we're also all fathers. So I was kind of wondering if you also are feeling the pains from Ray's side. Now, my children are much older than both of your children, but like my son is 23, and you know, we do podcasts together and stuff, so we have a pretty good relationship. But like, just imagining from the other aspect, from the Ray aspect, that's soon gonna be you guys, right? Like pretty soon, Andrew.
I mean, my son's six, so I got a couple more years of being untouchable for him. It does speak about the generational shift.
Well, he kind of started
shift.
It. He was trying to give you some beef with Cody, man. He was starting it up with you.
He did. He was trying to start it with me and Cody. I mean, he's a smart ass, too, I got to tell you. I get it. My dad was a bodybuilder. My grandfather was a professional bodybuilder, and I'm not, you know? I can shake my pecs a little bit like this. But that's about it.
That's going to be a gift very soon.
It should be a gift, because the only gift that's out there that I can find on Zarian is, what is the move that you did with the hand?
The dab. I did a dab.
That's what it was.
Oh, no.
I did a dab.
If I need the Zarian gift, that's the one that I always go and grab. Yeah. But Mike, you know, you also have a little bit of ways with your daughter.
Oh, no, we got beef right now. I could not get her to go to sleep last night to save my life. She was so mad at me. She went and told her mom on me, trying to get heat with me and my wife. It was a whole thing last night. So me and this kid, I'm actually gonna probably gonna put her on a terrorist watch list very soon. I have that authority because she could be a handful.
All right, let's talk about Edge against Finn. Now, as this audience knows, I've not been a fan of this current Edge character, but in some ways, I have some empathy for him because he is an older dude in a young person's business. And for those who listen to the Jeff Jarrett interview that Dave and I did, Jeff specifically said that this young generation doesn't want to listen to him. Well, maybe he was talking about him. But can you imagine being someone, you know, Edge's late comes up in the late 90s and he's been around for that long. And now, you know, you look at some of the younger talent and they're probably just waiting for this dude to retire. So a spot opens up on the top of the card. So I have a little bit of empathy for him there. He's definitely trying. He's trying to connect. I'm just not a fan of the get off my lawn version of his character right now.
But you know what I don't get?
Yeah.
He's only like 7 years older than Finn.
Yes.
Finn is 42. Edge is what? 48, 49, 50? Something like that. I mean, it's like it's less than a decade apart.
Finn has not been overexposed to the WWE audience, though. That is the part of it.
That's
it.
Uh-oh. Yeah.
So I want to let you know that the GIF is already out there. The peck popping GIF. From,
how is that a thing?
At Real Sam Fiennes. If you guys know Sam, he's a big part of the Wrestling Observer community. I've met Sam. He's done work for GCW and stuff on rings. And I've met him. Very nice guy. But he's got the GIF out there already. That was so fast. Great job. Great work. Man, I just retweeted it. So you can see
Sam. Sam's a pro. Sam knows how to do this stuff.
Yeah. Great dude. Sam's a great dude. So you're right about Finn. He's not that much younger, but again, he's not been on top, or at least in a, you know, semi-main event spot since the late 90s. So, like we've seen Edge. But what did you guys think of the Hell in a Cell stipulation? This was the heavy rumor that we were going to get here. And that, you know, this is going to be the end of the feud, at least we think, because who knows, you know, how much longer Edge is going to keep wrestling. But Mike, does this Hell in the Cell thing mean much to you? I know Triple H has said, you know, we're not going to build these pay-per-views around this stipulation. We're going to bring the stipulation in when it's necessary. I didn't really feel like it was necessary, but hey, maybe that's a way to establish this match and separate it from the other really big matches on this upcoming WrestleMania.
Yeah, I like this much better than them doing just a Hell in a Cell pay-per-view. I like building up to a certain match. I just don't think this match was the reason to do it. I think they probably had better matches or they could have saved it for a different match. And they don't really need it on this WrestleMania. They already have a lot going on. But it's going to be a good match, so I'm looking forward to it.
What do you think, Andrew?
I think it'll be a fantastic match. I think they'll, you know, and now there's the gimmick of, you know, possibly getting like a Brood Edge versus Demon Balor, and you could do, you know, it'll be fine. But again, I agree with you guys. I don't think it was necessary to do a Hell in a Cell. It's an element that was unnecessary for the feud, but I get why they're doing it to keep everybody out of the, you know, keep Judgment Day out of this. And all right, it'll be fine. It'll be a great match. I'm positive of that.
So my issue is this is not a main event. This is not going to main event one of the nights. So you're going to kind of throw a Hell in a Cell match in the middle of a show. Now, actually, Mike's cousin reminded me that one of the best Hell in a Cell matches was also kind of like the semi-main event of a WrestleMania with Triple H and The Undertaker. So that worked there. But I kind of wonder, is it going to be one of those things where they do so much in this match that the match is following, you're like, oh, you just got pinned by a finisher and Edge kicked out of like 50 things in the cage. Like, so that's kind of, but you know, people, I don't think people really care about that as much. Cause I when I saw, you know, I was live at Revolution and Texas Death, man, Moxley and Hangman knocking each other around with bricks. And I'm like, okay, you're kicking out of that stuff, or you're not getting, you know, you're not getting counted out of that stuff. Now, what kind of wrestling move is going to be a move later in the show where someone gets pinned and it's not going to be believable? Yet, I don't think it mattered to that live crowd. I don't know if it mattered that much in to the pay-per-view audience, but maybe people don't care about that as much. And you can just put it right in the middle, have these guys kill each other for 30 minutes, and the rest of the card is fine. Speechless.
Yes. Yeah. No, I totally agree. You know, I was letting Andrew talk.
I got a nice comment here, though. I got a nice comment to go back to Rey Mysterio and Dominic. Why aren't they making this a hair versus mask?
That would be great. Maybe that's where they go after this.
Puerto Rico.
I think they should go after this. Puerto Rico. Yeah. Doing in Puerto Rico. Legendary. Hair matches? Freaking great. Chop off that mullet?
That would be awesome. That would be awesome if, like, can you imagine, like, Ray, you know, let's say that Dom wins this match at WrestleMania, and I sure hope he does, and I think it'll kick off a nice feud. But maybe this is a three-match series, and in match number two, Ray's like, Dom, I'm taking away your inheritance, and Dom's like, I got mommy, I got Judgment Day. He's like, Dom, you're out of the house, buddy. He's like, I got mommy. We're cutting off your mullet. No, cannot do that, right? That could be Garrett, the great thing. What?
Here's another level. Ray doesn't cut the. I think in any hair match moving forward, X-Pac has to be the one that chops off the ponytails.
There you go.
I think that has to be a WWE gimmick. Yeah, then he can pin it on the board on Monday.
X-Pac, everything comes back to X-Pac. Okay, so last couple things before as we're getting the 10-minute mark here before Lance sends us a nasty DM. I just learned that Nikki and Brie are done with WWE. They have rebranded themselves as the Garcia Twins, and they do a podcast that they did a rebranding of as well. And I mean, I think we saw this coming when they did not do that Raw, the anniversary show, and you know they've been pretty vocal about certain things related to WWE, but I hope that WWE does not pretend that these women, you know, were sort of meaningless, because I always hearken back when WrestleMania was out here in Santa Clara, saw so many women who came with their significant others. And in some cases, maybe they didn't come with a dude. Maybe it was just a bunch of women. And the main reason, at least for the significant others, was, oh, yeah, I keep up with all of this stuff because of Divas and Bellas. And I was like, oh my gosh, like that is so amazing. But, you know, Andrew, from the branding and marketing side with Nikki and Brie, when they don't have that WWE machine or they don't have that WWE name behind them, they may lose a little bit of, you know, that audience, but maybe now they get to keep more of, you know, I don't know if they actually had to, WWE got a cut of what they did, but maybe they can, you know, can they be individuals outside of this WWE machine, do you think?
I think they'll be fine. They have enough management. They have so many connections in Hollywood between the reality show and side projects that they've had. I'm willing to bet that they're fine with their management team and they have stuff in line for them. They've been super successful outside of WWE. Their podcast is successful, their clothing line and all the other endorsements they've done. I don't think they'll have any problems, but it is interesting how vocal they were about the disappointment after they weren't used on TV on that show, right? They showed up and then they were in the hotel room. So whatever happened,
I thought maybe they were supposed to be like in the background in that poker game, and maybe that's not what they want to do. I had heard that. I don't know if that was confirmed, but I'd heard that might have been a reason.
Yeah, I mean, it's possible. I can't remember exactly what it was, but I think they'll be fine. The Garcia twins, they're going to show up on AEW, take out somebody, join Paige's group. I mean, you know, I don't know. But, you know, they were there at Revolution, obviously.
They were.
They were there. So I don't know. Maybe
obviously Brie married to Bryan Danielson. So that's the connection there.
Yeah. Yeah. So
I've been trying to sell that to AEW fans.
What, the fact that they're going to, do you think they're coming?
That they're married?
Oh, well, I don't know that they're coming or not. I'm just trying to sell it to AEW fans to see them do the complete 180 on the Bellas and say that they really like them now. which is going to warm my heart just to see them kind of turn themselves into pretzels to pretend like they actually like them. So I've been trying to sell them.
I do think some of it is very unfair. The criticism that they get, yeah, obviously there's criticism to be had. And the first version of the Bellas, when they first showed up, I could 100% understand the criticism of what they were doing. But Nikki was a main player in that women's revolution, the beginning of that. Mm-hmm. She improved tremendously in the ring. You know, the later Nikki Bella was very different than what we originally had. And Brie had her improvements also. And then she came back after having a baby, obviously. But things are very difficult after that, right? You don't have the time. Your body changes. Everything's different. So I don't feel that negativity towards them. It attracted a whole different audience. That their reality shows were very successful. It spun into something else. As a marketing standpoint, I think they were a 10 out of 10. It depends on what you're looking for with wrestling. Are you going to get a 60-minute Ironman match out of Brie Bella and Nikki Bella? Probably not. I wish you died in the womb promo. Yeah. I was not a fan of that. But, you know, there were elements that they had some really... Nikki had a decent run.
Yeah, no, I 100% agree. Now, I do think, now maybe, who knows if they have a compete or anything, but if you want to bring Brie into something like that All Access show, she's a vet, man. She knows exactly how to do this reality TV stuff and do it well. She would probably even have a lot of creative insight for them. And maybe she's already shared that through Brian or in other ways, but... You know, I think she could be valuable if that's kind of where they lean. If this All Access show is successful, season two, guess who's coming to dinner? Guess who's showing up on this show? Like, that would be kind of cool. And I think they should utilize her in that way if she wants that. And I think, you know, for the marketing of her podcast and stuff and the other things that she's doing, Nikki's still doing the four-part series on E!, right? Where she gets married. I think that's still under the Bella moniker, right? I don't know if that is currently going on or if it's coming out or if it's already done. That part I don't know, but I know that was under the Bella moniker for Nikki. All right, so good luck to them, and it's kind of cool. I don't know why I think it's cool when people can sort of distance themselves from WWE, because if you can stay with WWE and use their branding forever, you might as well do it as well. It just seems kind of cool when people kind of go, I can make it on my own. So I do root for them when that happens. All right, last little bit of news here, and Mike may have some insight into this, which is why I wanted to save it for the end, which is Impact and Anthem have a new guy in charge who is famous for being Oscar De La Hoya's previous lawyer, and he then became a partner with Oscar for Golden Boy Boxing. He is Richard Schaefer. Now, he and Oscar broke up at some point, and, you know, people don't think Golden Boy Boxing is the same, and it's not, though, you know, Oscar's still doing some stuff. He's got some fighters like Ryan Garcia. But, Mike, Richard Schaefer kind of running things at Anthem, does this change anything for Impact, you think?
In the short term, I'm not really sure, because it depends on if they're going to give Impact a bigger budget, which I don't know that they will. But Richard Schaefer does have a lot of connections all over the world with different media rights deals that he's probably helped negotiate through his boxing connections. But I don't know if that changes anything in the interim. It's probably going to help grow the Anthem brand. They are saying that they're going to be starting up a boxing promotion, and if that can get a little bit bigger, can they do some co-promoting with, not like a boxing wrestling show, but like have Impact, you know, commercials onto the boxing programs and stuff like that. Maybe they can do that. But, you know, I've seen these announcements before from Anthem. They've hired a lot of new people over the last couple of years, and Impact has essentially stayed the same. They haven't really gotten a whole lot bigger than they were when they first got onto Access. So I think, you know, Impact really is just, you know, inexpensive programming that triples the station average for their ratings on that Access channel and on Fight Network. And I think that's kind of what they use it for. It's like the anchor for those two networks. And bringing in Richard Schaefer, maybe it does open some doors for them. I don't know. Will they do something to where they have like a package deal for Invicta Impact and the boxing show, try to package that up for like a streaming rights thing with the Zone or Paramount Plus or, you know, whoever, just spitballing names out there. Could that be a possibility? I wouldn't rule anything like that out, but Impact kind of likes to just be in their own little world over there and do their own thing. So I don't know that it changes much for them, but Schaefer's a big deal, man. I mean, him and Oscar De La Hoya and Floyd Mayweather, they flipped the boxing world upside down whenever Oscar and Floyd fought back in the day, and with their 24/7 broadcast on HBO. That was a huge, huge thing that really set the tone for boxing going forward.
So you've experienced all of the things that Impact has tried to do creatively to grow, to change things up. In the post-TNA era of Impact, was the AEW partnership the best thing that for business that they tried? What were some, or were there other things in this current history that has actually worked better than the AEW thing?
Well, the peak with Kenny Omega and Rich Swann was probably the biggest thing that they've ever done. But since Omega has left, they've really kind of bottomed back out, and they never really recovered. They've tried some other things. They tried bringing Bully Ray back, and I know that his match with Josh Alexander did a little bit of business above what they normally do. But it just seems like, you know, the brand overall is a bit cold. A lot of people they gave up on it years ago, and they're never coming back. And so they kind of leverage the number of people that they already have and that they've had over the last few years. I don't know what they could do other than like signing a huge free agent, but they don't really seem to be in on those big name free agents that are out there or that are coming up to free agencies. There's this big wrestling war between AEW and WWE, and they're kind of just, you know, they're not really involved in it. They're just kind of overall like in this little bubble that they got, just kind of doing their own thing. But they did bring this guy, sign guy, Lou DeAngeli. And he's really done a really good job with a lot of their live events. And people, I don't think they're getting a lot of credit for, they're very small scale, but they've sold out every city they've gone to in calendar year 2023 so far. And that trend has continued. And then they got this big multiverse show coming up at the end of month for WrestleMania weekend, where they're doing a co-event with New Japan. So things are looking up in the live event portion and teaming up with New Japan a lot more. But I don't know that they'll ever get back to that peak where that they had with Kenny Omega.
Before we get out of here, why don't you let people know where they can find you on Twitter?
Yeah, you can follow me on Twitter. It's at MikeGilbert311. You can hear me talk about pro wrestling. You can hear me complain about the 49ers. We just lost another linebacker. I just got a notification on my watch that Aziz Alshayar has left, and I'm pretty disappointed about that. But you can hear me talk all things pro wrestling. Life, family, whatever, at MikeGilbert311.
Andrew, anything on schedule for Matt Men this week? Can you drop any more bombs on people?
Yeah, I got interviewing Billy Corgan on Friday.
There you go.
From the NWA to talk about their next show and everything else that they're up to. Billy Corgan's coming on Friday. We're going to film Matt Men afterwards, and then Observer Live on Sunday.
There you go. Busy man. All right. That's going to be it from here. So I want to thank Mike Gilbert for coming on and hanging out with us and being our special guest. And for Andrew Zarian, I am Double G. We will see you when we see you. Peace